Welcome to season two of Level With Us, where we'll be taking even deeper dives into the root causes and the intersecting issues of Central Ohio's housing crisis. Whether you're a first-time listener or a follower of the pod, thank you for lending your ears to an effort that is desperate for more attention, more voices, and more action. Everyone is affected by our housing shortage, whether you're a homeowner, a renter, a landlord, or someone experiencing homelessness or housing instability. And all of us have a role to play in fixing it. So here in season two, I'm bringing on more experts, community organizers, and leaders that I hope inspire more of you to find out what that role is. I'm so excited to share this month's and next month's conversation with you. I had the privilege of chatting with Columbus futurist David Staley, who is also an associate professor of history at The Ohio State University. Together, we discuss not only the future of housing, but the driving factors that determine it and ways we could possibly build the future we want. This month's episode is more so laying the groundwork for what futurism is and explores more grounded applications, while next month's we will dive all the way into a futurist's imagination. That's when we'll discuss topics like the implications of AI, how to address systemic inequalities, and how we could restructure our culture and economy to not only guarantee housing for all, but to actually place a person's intrinsic value above their ability to generate income, and just rethink what it means to be a contributing member of society. Big stuff. Let's get into it.
It occurred to me just the other day, this January will be our 25th year.
Wow.
And it kind of snuck up on me, and I feel like we need to do something. Columbus Futurist began as as the local chapter of the World Future Society, and we haven't been affiliated with the World Future Society now in probably close to 15, maybe even 20 years or so. So I describe it as a think tank, but I can be a little bit more precise in my language. And a couple of years ago, I borrowed an idea from the futurist Alvin Toffler, who's a very, very old name. He wrote this back in 1970, but I think the idea really holds. And if you allow me, I'd like to read it. This is just off our website.
Yeah, let's do it.
Toffler said, corporations, local governments, schools, voluntary associations, and others need to examine their potential futures imaginatively. One way to help them to do so would be to establish in each community imaginetic centers, that was his word, imaginetic centers devoted to technically assisting brainstorming. These would be places where people noted for creative imagination are brought together to examine present crises, to anticipate future crises, and to speculate freely, even playfully, about possible futures. And I love that. I'm not certain that his vision has actually come to pass, but I think that's what we've established in Columbus. So broadly, Columbus Futurist is an imaginetic center.
Yeah.
There was a book that came out, I guess now about 3 or 4 years ago, by Jack Fuller and Martin Reeves, two guys from Boston Consulting Group. And their book was called The Imagination Machine. And what they basically argued is that we, and I think they meant largely in the business world, but I think more broadly they mean we need more imagination. Mm-hmm. And companies need to be in the business of generating imagination, new ideas. Where do we get the ideas or the imagination?
Yeah.
As futurists, we observe the world, and we look for differences that make a difference. They're called weak signals. That's one of the things that futurists look for. Mm. And so we have a technique or a way of organizing our observations. It's called STEEP, society, technology, environment, economics, politics, including geopolitics. And so anything we're observing about the world, we can sort of place in these different buckets. So I look for social trends. I look at music that young people are listening to, or fashions, or indeed political preferences. Technology, that's kind of obvious. I look for economic trends. And so that's the sort of research that we do, or the basis of our ideas. And then what we do from that is sort of imagine what are the implications of this. If this is a change that's occurring, well, what are going to be the effects of that?
Yeah.
Right? And so, I mean, I can point to all sorts of examples. Technology is probably the easiest one to look for. I pay attention to ideas that are being developed in commercial labs or university labs, and then think about the consequences about this technology. Like I said, I'm very interested in social trends, cultural trends, which are harder, frankly, to imagine their implications.
Right.
I once did an exercise with my students where I said, imagine, it's 20 years in the future, imagine what technology is going to look like. They could do it without any difficulty. And then I said, what kind of music will college students be listening to in 20 years? And they had no idea. Those are harder, I think. But I think maybe more just as important to consider.
Yeah. And plus, how do you know if something is kind of a long-standing, you know, institution or a blip, you know?
Yeah, what's a fad, what's a trend, what's a driver?
Mm-hmm.
And as futurists, we really try to look for drivers.
Mm-hmm.
These are not sort of, you know, individual fads, but what sort of social or political or cultural force that might be driving events forward.
Looking into Columbus's future, there are some indicators that we may be on the right path. And there are ways we could get creative in responding to current and future needs. But as we discuss, the future for those in elected office or in the C-suite can often be as short-sighted as 1 year. For this reason, David recommends building futurism into our present policy-making strategies.
I don't think of myself, at least in my futurist role, as either an optimist or a pessimist.
Mm-hmm.
I get asked this a lot. Am I optimistic or pessimistic about the future? And I say neither. Because the future is going to... We are right now living in someone's idea of utopia.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same moment, we're living in someone's idea of dystopia. It
mm-hmm.
depends on who you are, your place in life, your privilege. And I tend to see the same thing about the future. That said, I think that there are a lot of opportunities that I'm tracking right now for housing in central Ohio. I'm cautiously optimistic about the Regional Housing Coalition. I think it shows that leaders understand there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they can deliver on solutions is a whole other matter. But I'm really optimistic about that. I think that there are opportunities for zoning reform. And again, I'm not the only one who's talking about this. But to me, zoning reform also extends into the suburbs,
mm-hmm.
for instance. Kinds of issues around mixed-use development, density. I should also be very quick to add that some of the suburbs around Columbus are starting to think along these lines, Dublin, Upper Arlington, but really rethinking zoning reform.
Mm-hmm.
And in that context, one of the opportunities I see, although I don't know how many people in Columbus are really talking or thinking in these terms, is the potential for developing more 15-minute cities.
Mm-hmm.
In Columbus, and I don't know if I have to define that or not, but it's
pretty much anywhere in 15 minutes.
Yes, by say walking or by bike or something like that, as opposed to a car or
something like that.
And so, 15-minute city. The idea is to get away from car-centric
mm-hmm.
Development, which is essentially how Columbus is organized. you pretty much need a car to get to anything that you need. 15-minute cities means physically redesigning cities so that residential areas are developed in the same place as grocery stores, doctor's offices, schools, all the things you might need. And then you are a bike or a scooter or even a walk 15 minutes or so to any one of those.
Mm-hmm.
There are some cities that are doing this. Paris has sort of famously done this. I don't know if anyone in Columbus is thinking along these lines. But if we're going to think about zoning reform, I wonder if we might think about it in terms of 15-minute cities. One of the things that, or one of the components of the 15-minute city is proximity to schools. And I wonder if we might not rethink how we organize schools in Columbus. especially around neighborhood micro schools. So a micro school has 150 students. So what if we thought about decentering public schooling in Columbus to be a number of these small, I think of them as human scale schools? I think that would be a real attractor for families to move into an area and develop a flywheel, I think, out of something like that. I think another opportunity is around multifamily dwellings, and maybe even, and I know there's a more specialized term for it, multi-generation housing. We don't really think in those terms, I think, in Columbus. We're still somewhat segmented, I think, in that regard. But as part of zoning reform, we could be thinking about new ways to imagine the kinds of environments that people are living in, instead of the single-family, standalone house.
Yeah.
Which is more typical in Columbus.
And more accessible, to emerging generations.
Younger people, Generation Z, have expressed a preference for, or at least can imagine different kinds of housing options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think nobody, I don't think there's anybody out there who hasn't, like, ideated a commune with their, like, best friends. And I think there's something to that, you know, beyond, potentially a cult. But...
Were you familiar with the Golden Girls scenario?
Yeah, like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with the exception of two characters, those were women that... They weren't related.
Mm-hmm.
They were just the same age, and they were all either widows or divorced or something like that. We could be seeing more of those sorts of living arrangements.
Yeah, and that kind of housing is suitable for more than just families living together, but of course friends living together, or you can't afford to live on your own and you need a roommate, or
yes.
More so now, especially in Columbus, our Somali and Ethiopian populations are kind of like the big driver of population increases here, and they often have, you know, more than four people in their family. They need, you know, four or five, six bedroom homes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, developing housing with more people in mind, I guess, would benefit a swath of populations.
Mm-hmm. No question.
Mm-hmm. I think, though, it's hard to imagine building for a future while responding to current needs. And, you know, how do you remain adaptive in that way?
Boy, I don't have a simple answer to that, because you've hit the nail right on the head. It has to do, the challenge has to do with ingraining more long-term thinking into our decision-making processes. And that's, you know, whether you're a civic leader, a corporate leader, nonprofit leader, it means really acting on long-term thinking, which is a real challenge, especially in the United States. But I think especially among corporations, among cities, we don't afford ourselves the opportunity to think long-term. And by long-term, I literally mean on the order of 10, 15, 20 years. Most leaders, most organizations have a time horizon of next year,
yeah,
if we're lucky.
One to five.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 1 to 5 if we're lucky,
yeah.
I think. Yes, 1 to 5 if we're lucky. But that means a sort of a culture change. And there are places in the world where thinking and acting on a long-term basis are more common.
Mm-hmm.
China, Japan, in Finland, there's a government ministry whose job literally, and it has to do with what their job is. They're dealing with nuclear waste. Their job is literally to think out 10,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So these places exist in the world. Very, very, very hard to implement, though. But we have so many issues and challenges right now. I think the impulse is to say we need to deal with what's right here in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's maybe a luxury to think, long term. But I also think it's the way most everyone is incentivized, mm-hmm. right? You're incentivized for the decisions and solutions you provide right now. We're not always incentivized for our long term thinking.
That's what I heard when the COTA levy was up, and people were like, well, I'm not even going to see the outcome
right.
of my tax dollars
exactly.
for 15, 20 years. Why would I vote for this?
Yes.
Well, because hopefully you're going to still be here in 15, 20 years, or you yeah. care enough to pay it forward. I don't know.
Yes. it's very difficult, for instance, for a politician mm-hmm. to say, look, I'm thinking out 20 or 30 years. I'm thinking about your kids and your grandkids.
Yeah.
That's a hard sell, I think, for most voters. But as futurists, this is what we do. We think out 20 to 30 years.
Yeah, we need like a futurist government office, huh?
I have definitely made that argument in a number of venues, and I've said as much to the governor. I've said it is becoming more common for futurists to be embedded in corporations and other organizations. It's the very, very rare government or political agency that has a futurist. I've been making this argument a lot, that there should be a cabinet level position for a futurist.
Level With Us is brought to you by Homeport and is recorded, mixed, and edited by Lauren Sega. All sources are in the show notes. Homeport creates strong communities by developing quality, affordable homes on a cornerstone of dignity, security, and opportunity. To learn more, or if you'd like to support our mission, visit us at homeportohio.org.